This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Massachusetts has made progress in our fight against the coronavirus. Our positive test rate is less than half what it was at its peak. But with mass gatherings, protesting police brutality, phase two of Governor Baker's reopening plan may be days away now, should we be worried about a spike, a new spike? And if we have one, will we even be able to tell what caused it? Here's Governor Baker yesterday.
This is a balancing act between giving people the right to speak up about what they believe and at the same time recognizing and understanding that we are still in the midst of a terribly dangerous and wildly contagious virus.
So with us on the line is Dr. Joseph Bettencourt, who's the Vice President and Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer at Massachusetts General Hospital. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Dr. Bettencourt.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me again.
Also with us is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, infectious disease physician and assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. She's also the medical director of public health programs and associate hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center. Welcome back to you as well, Dr. Pierre.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
So listeners, we're inviting your thoughts and questions. We have two physicians here talking with us about COVID-19 today. So have you attended a protest? What precautions did you take? Are you planning to go to a retail store or another business in phase two? And are you worried about how either might impact Massachusetts's response to the virus? Call us. If you have questions, call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So Dr. Bettencourt, I'll turn to you first. Do you expect that we are going to see a spike in cases because of the mass gatherings and protests we've seen over the last week?
I think it's an interesting question, and I think, you know, as we look towards the future, we were always concerned about, you know, these weeks ahead. We're concerned because we're slowly reopening. We're concerned because certainly if there is a spike, it's going to take a couple of weeks for us to pick it up, and by that time, certainly the worry is that the, you know, horse may have left the barn already, and so we be behind by the time we pick it up. And, you know, there's no doubt that as people gather in large numbers, that there's an increase in risk. And so, you know, we're keeping an eye on that as well. But these are all things that I think are critical and, you know, all things that we here at the healthcare system, as we slowly, you know, decommission and you know, take down a lot of the things we stood up in response to the COVID pandemic, you know, these are concerns for us.
Dr. Pierre, what's your response to that? How concerned are you?
We're absolutely concerned. At my hospital, we are the providers of choice for populations that have been marginalized by poverty and economic inequality, by racism, by xenophobia. These are the communities that are of color, of black and brown, and are out in full force protesting. So we are absolutely concerned that our communities might be affected. And I really think it is incumbent upon us to give our patients and our community the message that there are things that we can do to prevent the cycle of transmissions while out, whether it be going to reopenings or protesting. We are aligned with our patients and with our community. But there are certainly things that we are concerned about. We are absolutely concerned about seeing another spike.
Okay, so while that's, we're having that conversation in the background, 2.5 weeks into the first phase of our economic reopening, Dr. Bettencourt, are you confident that these sustained lower numbers that we're seeing on rolling averages mean that it's working, that we're reopening safely, or are you still concerned about spikes that may lag from that?
I think the lag is always a concern, but we're certainly seeing improvements. You know, here at Mass General, the biggest populations that we saw were individuals from Chelsea, Revere, East Boston. We've been tracking that daily, you know, going back pretty early on. These were major hotspots. In fact, Chelsea, the you know, most hard-hit community in the entire state and one of the tops in the nation by, you know, incidence rates. And the good news is that we haven't had admissions for a couple of days, you know, several days from those towns. And so that's, you know, definitely good news. That being said, you know, these communities were ravaged. They were the canary in the coal mine. They've really been through it. And so the importance of surveillance and the importance of making sure that you know, that we don't have brush fires building up in places that have been, you know, pretty ravaged, I think is something that we're monitoring carefully. And this does require incredible vigilance, and it requires quick action should we see any kind of turn in direction.
I want to grab a call. The lines are just filling up so fast. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Paul on the line from Leicester. Paul, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. When our library reopens, I think we should limit access to people that have masks. However, the public health department has said that people can choose not to wear masks if they have medical conditions. What should we do about that?
Okay, great question. And Dr. Pierre, you've been on our air before specifically talking about masks. So I thought this would be a great question for you.
Absolutely. It certainly is a concern. We want to make sure as much as possible that we're doing our part to protect our community, our individuals that are coming into our spaces at the same time that we are. And masks are an important part of source control and to some extent for protection against those respiratory droplets that can be expelled from people who are COVID positive, whether they know it or not. We have definitely talked about the fact that, you know, it can make us an easy to think about people who have medical conditions not wearing masks. The number of people who have those medical conditions is probably actually quite low. And I actually have said before that for those who believe that because of their respiratory symptoms, whether it be asthma or COPD, that they are limited or restricted from wearing masks, I urge them to speak to their physicians because many of the conditions people believe that may preclude them from wearing masks are actually not contraindicated for them to be wearing those masks. That being said, for people who, the limited amount of people who are going to be in spaces and not wearing masks because of a medical condition, there are ways that we can certainly use to protect ourselves. Wearing the masks ourselves, if you don't have a medical condition, maintaining physical separation, at least 6 feet of physical separation, maintaining good hand hygiene. Those are all great ways that we can reduce our risk of spread. And I imagine that as libraries and other spaces open, there may not be a heavy density, at least not the density or volume of people that we saw pre-COVID. And so there are opportunities to limit our exposures to distance well over 6 feet as we encounter people in our environments who may not be masked.
Thanks for that, Dr. Pierre. Dr. Betancourt, the very first time we had you on air after the pandemic began, we were talking to you early on as you were beginning to look at the numbers at MGH and raising concerns that you were seeing a disproportionate number of Latino and Black patients. Tell us where we stand now.
Well, you know, we've made great progress. Certainly, our peak was probably late April. And, you know, we have really seen a complete and steady decline. And particularly for those communities, as we monitored everything very carefully, this decline has been an even decline. And by that I mean we're not talking about decline in certain communities and not others. We have really seen a significant decline here in the communities that became real hotspots and that, quite frankly, ended up in our hospital. And so I think that's been positive. It's probably a lot of different things that are happening. I mean, you know, certainly we want to think that the actions that those cities and towns took in partnership with us played some role in driving this concept of, you know, education with a trusted messenger in a language that people understand played a role. You know, every little bit counts, and I think, we're pleased that we've been able to make good progress there as the numbers, demonstrate.
Dr. Pierre, I want to ask your reactions to that, and I'm going to give you a quote from an article in The New Yorker about tensions between protests, COVID-19, disproportionate effect on people of color. They cited an African-American doctor, Tyson Bell, from Charlottesville, who said, quote, two competing factors, racism and COVID, are killing my community. It feels really unfair, and I can't fight both at the same time, end quote. Does that resonate with you, and how should we think about that in this moment where we have two huge social issues coming forward at the same time, the impacts of COVID-19 and the protests against police brutality?
Absolutely. I would say that they are different manifestations of the same reality, right? We have structural racism that is leading to both health or is exacerbated or continues to fuel the health inequity that we're seeing with COVID-19 related infections, hospitalizations, and deaths, and then we have police brutality. And so it certainly is, you can certainly be in solidarity of both the protest and the desire to ensure that our communities are maintaining good infection prevention. And even though I completely agree that at our hospital we are also seeing the declines, we continue to admit people of color, Black and Latinx patients. And we are concerned even before the protests and before this cycle of police brutality against Black bodies commenced again, we were concerned about our communities of color because we know that they're frontline workers in many of the industries that are reopening. And so this is always a concern for us. And so we've been speaking to our patients, making sure that they realize that we are in solidarity with them. But part of that solidarity extends to ensuring that they have the right messaging and are equipped with the right tools to protect themselves when they go out, whether it be to protest or to go grocery shopping.
All right, so our calls continue to come in, and a lot of them are for the two of you as medical professionals. So I want to grab another one now, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Tracy on the line from Dorchester. Tracy, what's your question?
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask about antibody testing. I live in Dorchester, and my community, as you were stating, along with other communities, surrounding communities who, you know, have been decimated by COVID-19. And I mean, all you heard was ambulances all day, all night, until they came to my door. So I had COVID-19 in my household. I had a roommate that was hospitalized. And then my
son. I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I was a caregiver to both. When my roommate first started, he's an essential worker, when he first started displaying symptoms, you know, you had a certain hospital in Dorchester. Oh, where the COVID place to come?
I'm sorry to rush you. I really am. But I'm going to ask you if we can go to the part. What's your question for our doctors?
Oh, about the antibody testing. Basically, the testing came late in our community when Baker was talking. So I was a caretaker to my son and my roommate, and I did not have a chance to get tested. This was in April. So I did not display symptoms. I'm still scared to death. Where can I get antibody testing where I don't have to pay for it and go to North Shore, South Shore, Brookline? Why are they not coming to the communities that are most affected when they think that 50% are asymptomatic?
Thank you for that, Tracy. And I'm actually going to add, we have another caller. I'm not sure we'll be able to get to him, but I know his question is related. So I know that Jim is calling from Hyde Park and wants to know about the validation of antibody tests. So it's kind of a three-part question. Can one get one? Can one get one in Boston or in the Dorchester area? And are they validated and reliable? Maybe you can start for us, Dr. Betancourt.
Yeah, and I would definitely defer to my colleague, Dr. Pierre, on the, you know, the infectious disease side. But here's, I think, my understanding of serology testing. Serology testing is still in the research phase. You know, there's two types of testing. There's PCR testing, which tests for, you know, the virus and actually picks up viral particles, too. We have patients who are testing positive weeks after they have symptoms. And the going thinking here is that, you know, the PCR testing is picking up, you know, dead virus. So that's one piece. But then the serology testing, which was piloted in a bunch of different places over the last couple of weeks. We did it in Chelsea with about 200 people randomly. It's been done through our hospital in partnership with the city in several places. You know, we're really looking to try to get prevalence rates, and what the serology testing gives us is a sense of your IgG or IgM. These are types of antibodies related to the COVID virus. Now, you know, please to stand corrected by Dr. Pierre. My understanding is that this is still in research phase, that we don't fully know if the serology testing is definitive enough to tell us whether we're fully immune. And so I think that's part of what we're trying to validate, part of what we're trying to discover. And so, you know, I'd be interested in hearing my colleague's perspective on this as well.
Good. Let's do that. Let's turn to you, Dr. Pierre.
Thanks, Dr. Betancourt. I agree with a lot of what you said. I also just wanted to say I feel the frustration of the caller. I am a Black woman. I live in Hyde Park, and so this is my community as well. And the access or unequal access to testing has been a great source of frustration. It is true that antibody testing or serology testing is in its infancy, and we're still trying to figure out how best to deploy it, because it is true that having a positive serologic test doesn't necessarily equate with immunity at this point. And Currently, the hospitals that are using it in Boston, to the best of my knowledge, are using it primarily in the inpatient setting with only really limited use in the outpatient setting. That being said, we are really trying to figure out where it would be the most useful in the outpatient setting to give people a sense of at least how that...
Oops, I think we just lost Dr. Pierre. That's okay. I'm sure we'll get her back on the line and we'll finish getting her response when we do. So Dr. Betancourt, since we lost Dr. Pierre, there are a couple of other questions that I know I want to ask on both of these fronts, both on the protests and on reopening. On the protest side, if one attends one of the protests, I mean, there are two more today, J.P. Roslindale we know about today. What is the best way to stay safe? And should one seek a test after participating in a large group setting like that where social distancing, et cetera, can be extremely difficult?
Yeah, so I think certainly the advice that I'm trying to give people who go to protests, and I fully respect and understand, you know, the need for this protest and the need to stand up. I mean, you know, this has kind of come full circle, right? Structural racism was one of the reasons why these communities were hit hard. They were hit hard. They're kind of coming out, and then we have another very visible event that drives people to the streets, and so we're back at fighting the root cause in the first place. I think that's important to acknowledge. Ultimately, I'm telling people to be as careful as they can, certainly wear masks, certainly bring hand sanitizer, try to keep a distance as best you can, and especially if you're higher risk, if you're older, if you have any chronic conditions, you know, you might want to think about ways in which you could demonstrate, you know, raising your voice in ways that, you know, keep you at a distance or in different ways, because we definitely don't want, you know, people at high risk in those environments. There's definitely more risk. There's no doubt about it. But ultimately, with those precautions and trying to keep some degree of distance, which we have seen in some protests, you know, I think there's a chance to mitigate, which is really what we're trying to focus on. As it relates to, you know, recommendation of if you go to a protest, do you get a test? You know, I don't know that there's a solid recommendation around that yet. You know, the common sense would be that if you feel like you've, you know, been exposed, then certainly that there's an opportunity to get a test. There is more testing available. I would tell people to just, you know, give their caregiver a call and try to get some clarity on that. You know, I think we're managing these on an individual basis.
We have Dr. Pierre back. Welcome back, Dr. Pierre.
Sorry about that technical difficulty.
That's okay. So listen, we only have a couple of minutes left, and there are a couple of other questions that I want to get in. So if you don't mind, I'm gonna shift gears now, and I'm gonna ask you. The governor could decide as early as Saturday to move on to phase two: outdoor seating at restaurants, limited shopping in retail stores, childcare, and summer camps. Not overnight, but summer camps. Are you feeling like it's safe to move forward next week at this point?
As an infection prevention physician, I'm certainly uneasy because we know that there, in addition to the first phase of reopening, we now have protests that, of course, potentially increase the risk of seeing another surge or another spike in the number of COVID-19 cases, which will certainly affect the background community rates that the second wave of reopenings is happening on top of. And so I certainly urge caution. I know that many of the plans that we've looked at are well thought out. They're heavily vetted. They've been evaluated multiple times. And they're done in the sense of trying to, as much as possible, institute physical distancing to ensure that people have good access to masks and other personal protective equipment. That being said, there are some situations, childcare was one that you mentioned, where we really can't guarantee physical distancing. It's just going to be very difficult to do. And source control for children as young as two is being recommended, and we know that's going to be really difficult to implement. And so I would say that I'm certainly uneasy about it, and I would say that we really have to critically keep track of these numbers. And if we're seeing multiple spikes, quickly rethink and address the issues that we're seeing, because we really don't have many shots to prevent, other opportunities for widespread transmission, especially in vulnerable communities.
Thank you for that. And Dr. Betancourt, last question, and I apologize because we have about 30 seconds left before we have to go to a break. If we do see another spike, will we know what caused it?
We won't, ultimately, I think we just we are prepared. We just went through this incredible effort. We will be prepared again, and this is a grand experiment until we get a vaccine.
And that is Dr. Joseph Bettencourt, who's the Vice President and Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer at Mass General Hospital. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Cassandra Pierre, infectious disease physician and assistant professor of medicine at the BU School of Medicine. She's also the medical director of public health programs and associate hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center. Thanks again to you, Dr. Pierre.
Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.